Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Israel reacted again today to Palestinian guerrilla raids from Lebanese soil, and Israel's prime minister is talking tough about new measures to meet the threat of terrorism. Bob Simon reports from Tel Aviv.
Israeli gunboats continued their bombardment of Palestinian positions along the Lebanese coast before dawn today, and Prime Minister Begin said he will recommend that the death penalty be used for terrorists guilty of extreme acts of violence. The Army spokesman announced that Israeli naval fire was directed against Palestinian bases in the area of Tyre. He refused to confirm or deny reports that Israeli ground forces were involved in the attack. The fact that Israel has not yet engaged in massive retaliation for Sunday's raid on Nahariya has led informed sources in Jerusalem to speculate that the army may be quietly shifting gears from a policy of retaliation to one of preventive action. According to this theory, Israeli forces will continue to hammer away at Palestinians in Lebanon with the objective of keeping them on the move, away from the shore, preventing them from building up a stable infrastructure which could be used for training or operations. Prime Minister Begin told a closed meeting of a parliamentary committee that he will recommend the reinstatement of the death penalty for terrorists at next Sunday's cabinet meeting. The only man ever executed by Israel was Nazi war criminal Adolf Eichmann. Bob Simon, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
The Egyptian Foreign Ministry has released a statement saying, quote, "The Egyptian government strongly denounces Israeli attacks on southern Lebanon and views those attacks as being in direct contradiction to the peace treaty, its clauses and acts." The Egyptian government adds that Palestinian attacks on Israel through the resistance movement and counterattack only produce loss of lives on both sides, and that no solution but a comprehensive settlement of this conflict appears possible. Yesterday, in new moves to punish Egypt for signing the peace treaty with Israel, Saudi Arabia and Kuwait broke diplomatic relations with Cairo. Egypt at once took the same action against Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. 10 other Arab states have already recalled their ambassadors from Cairo, and CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb reports that the State Department is gloomy about these developments inside the Arab world.
When most of the Arab states met at Baghdad last month and threatened to punish Egypt for signing a peace treaty with Israel, American officials hoped that would prove to be another exercise in Arab rhetoric. It has not, and these officials are obviously disappointed. Baghdad now represents a major victory for the Arab hardliners, especially Iraq. Egypt's isolation in the Arab world is to be driven home as Arab diplomats pack up and go home. Saudi Arabia will make no new aid pledges to Egypt, though it may honor existing ones. Adding up to about $100 million a year in economic aid now in the pipeline, plus more than $500 million for the purchase of 50-odd F-5E jet fighters from the United States. But that's it, meaning Egypt becomes even more dependent upon American aid, and it becomes more unlikely that the next stage of the Egypt-Israel talks focusing on the Palestinian problem can be fruitful. In addition, the administration argument that selling warplanes to Saudi Arabia ensures a pro-peace line is bound to run into sharp new questioning on Capitol Hill. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
President Carter today is holding a ceremony of remembrance for the 6 million Jews and the 5 million others killed in the Nazi concentration camps of World War II. It was on this day in 1943 that the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto rose up in a heroic struggle against the German occupation forces, and the president wants it observed as International Holocaust Remembrance Day. An apparent attempt was made today on the life of Iran's Prime Minister Mehdi Bazargan. Tony Alloway has details in Tehran.
The government issued repeated flat denials, but several eyewitnesses said they saw the attempt as Bazargan rode through Tehran in a funeral motorcade for former Chief of Staff Major General Mohammad Vali Gharani, who was assassinated in Tehran yesterday. The eyewitnesses said they saw three men approach Bazargan's car, one of them carrying what looked like a petition. Bazargan was smiling and waving at the crowds lining the streets. But the man with the petition had a pistol hidden underneath, the eyewitnesses say, and one claimed he also saw another man start to pull the pin on a grenade. Immediately, Revolutionary Guards lunged at the three men and arrested them before a shot could be fired. But no more was heard of the men. The official local radio carried nothing about the incident, and the government insisted that it never happened. This could be explained, the eyewitnesses say, by the fact that Bazargan seemed totally unaware that anything was happening. Tony Alloway for CBS News, Tehran.
As for yesterday's assassination of General Gharani, an act that puzzled many observers at the time, a little-known terrorist group has now claimed responsibility. In a letter published in a Tehran newspaper, the group says Gharani was killed because he was guilty of treason during the Shah's regime and because he helped crush the Kurdish revolt last month at the city of Sanandaj. The United African National Council, headed by Bishop Abel Muzarewa, today won the black majority rule election in Rhodesia. Returns from last week's balloting show that the party has won a majority of seats in parliament. And this means that Muzarewa will become Rhodesia's first black prime minister, succeeding Ian Smith. The leader of another black party, the Reverend Ndabaningi Sithole, has registered a strong objection, reported from Salisbury by Robin Wright.
In an interview this morning, Reverend Sithole charged that government civil servants were responsible for manipulation of the election. Sithole is one of five candidates vying to lead Rhodesia's first black-dominated government. He said polling officials urged voters to back certain candidates. He did not name which candidates. However, Sithole's poor showing indicates he was referring to his opposition. The American Educated Moderate called for an immediate investigation to look into what he labeled gross irregularities. Government officials responded quickly. A member of the election directorate said Sithole should have used proper channels to issue a complaint. The spokesman added that the government had no information to substantiate the claims. Sithole's dramatic denunciation is the first incident to cast doubt on the validity of the election and could lead to a major setback for Rhodesia's last-ditch effort to settle its 13-year-old constitutional crisis. Robin Wright, CBS News, Salisbury.
Sithole, Bishop Muzarewa, and Jeremiah Sherrao are the black leaders associated with Prime Minister Smith in the transitional government. Muzarewa's campaign director has called on Sithole to accept his defeat gracefully, and Sherrao is quoted as saying, "The elections are over, and that's it." The Red River, flowing between Grand Forks, North Dakota, and East Grand Forks, Minnesota, is now at its highest level in more than 80 years, more than 20 feet above flood stage and still rising. Bill Owen, operations director at the Grand Forks Flood Control Center, reports emergency preparations.
The University of North Dakota is not holding classes today so that students can fight some flood situations, and the Chamber of Commerce has asked that all businesses that are non-essential businesses, that they close and allow their employees also to fight the flood. Things are pretty quiet in town as far as business activity is concerned, but it's not quiet as far as our flood-fighting activities are concerned.
Thousands of volunteers stood guard along the dikes at Grand Forks during the night. Many of them came from high schools as far as 50 miles away. This is the 25th day of the mechanic strike against United Airlines, the nation's largest air carrier. Contract negotiations under the auspices of a federal mediator have resumed in Denver, but some believe the walkout is far from over, and Mitchell Krause in New York reports that the impact is mounting.
Every day, United's fleet of 340 planes remains grounded, the airline loses an estimated $2 million, money it must pay out as interest on loans and as half salaries for its 7,000 executives, some of whom are working as cleaning personnel on planes United services for other airlines. Meanwhile, almost 30,000 United employees have been furloughed in addition to the 18,000 mechanics on strike, and United is sacrificing $9 million a day in revenue to airlines still flying. The financial impact is especially severe this year, the first year the airline industry has no mutual aid pact, which provided United with $48 million following a 16-day strike in 1975, money other airlines remitted to United from business they had gained because of the United strike. So far, an estimated 2 million airline trips have been canceled, even though operating airlines have increased their passenger loads substantially. Mitchell Krause, CBS News, New York.
Rubber Workers President Peter Bomarito is still talking about a possible strike against the Big Four tire companies as negotiations continue in Washington between the union and one of the Big Four, Uniroyal. Federal mediator Wayne Horvitz is taking part, and Bomarito doesn't like that. He says, quote, "The government ought to get the hell out of the free collective bargaining." An airliner with 57 people aboard has disappeared on a domestic flight in Ecuador, and authorities have commenced an intense aerial search. They say that the plane has almost certainly crashed.